This is Jay Sekulow. Troubling development. ISIS on the outskirts of Baghdad.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
ISIS militants are getting closer to Baghdad. We're looking into these reports now, but CBS saying that ISIS has infiltrated a suburb near Abu Ghraib, which is about 8 to 10 miles west of Baghdad and right near the airport.
What ISIS has been trying to do is encircle Baghdad to north, west, and the south for a number of weeks now, and they've been relatively successful at doing it. So they've been attacking in the north, south, and west, and infiltrating the neighborhoods there. Why? So they can conduct operations in Baghdad. It's the obvious. Terrorist activity has been going on a regular basis. They support that terrorist activity from those neighborhoods, but also I believe they're leading up to a more conventional attack on the Green Zone itself. Rockets, mortars, and then possibly a ground attack.
Nothing the eye should ever see.
He approaches things like a law professor in presenting kind of the logic of his position. And there's nothing wrong with that. You want to have a president who thinks through these issues. But my experience in Washington is that logic alone doesn't work. That when you lay out a position, you've got to roll up your sleeves and you've got to basically fight to get it done. That is key in Washington. In order for presidents to succeed, they cannot just, you know, when they run into problems, kind of step back and give up.
What ISIS has been able to do, despite 2 months of airstrikes in Iraq and 2+ weeks of airstrikes in Syria, is they have been able to maintain their freedom of movement and their ability to attack at will. Our level of effort in terms of airstrikes, I don't believe is what it could be and should be.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
So how are those airstrikes working out for us and for our allies in the region? Evidently not so well. President's failed military strategy. That's what we're calling it today. Failed military strategy. We want your comments on this. 1-800-684-3110. 8 miles from Baghdad, you've got an Iraqi security expert saying that if the Islamic State controls Anbar, they would be able to threaten serious targets in Baghdad, which they are doing now. They would also get the government would lose control of that dam, and that is a huge deal. And the security forces would have to retreat. There would be a bloodbath. This is coming from Iraqi security forces. So we've been over there with these pinprick airstrikes, and it's done nothing to really stop ISIS. You realize that. How do you feel the president's doing in this, and what does it mean for the region? We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Is the president acting as commander-in-chief? Again, 800-684-3110. Quickly to Jordan, then to David. Jordan, the latest in Washington on this, we were just up there yesterday. A lot of concern on Capitol Hill over the way this is going.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a situation now where more and more our soldiers are getting closer and closer to coming into this contact with not just ISIS from, you know, 15,000 feet, but now we're using Apache attack helicopters. I mean, so we're getting into that situation where the risk level is going up in the conflict. Of course, we know special forces were actually on the ground. We learned that in Syria at a failed attempt to try to rescue the hostages. So they've come into contact before with these ISIS fighters, but now they are in harm's way even more so as ISIS, again, is 8 miles from the airport in Baghdad.
Yeah, David, how serious? We're going to take a break here in a moment, folks, but how serious is this militarily?
Oh, it's incredibly gravely serious. I mean, we could be facing soon a street-to-street, house-to-house battle in Baghdad, which would be an absolute bloodbath.
What grade do you give the commander-in-chief? We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Don't forget, also, we've got the petition up to stand with Israel, especially as this UN matter moves forward. Fan will give us an update on that, and I encourage you to do that. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. That's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. Hey, next Tuesday, our book, Rise of ISIS, comes out in bookstores everywhere. You can still pre-order it, but go in and order copies, multiple copies. Get them for your friends. Rise of ISIS, a threat we can't ignore. And if you want to stand with Israel at the UN, and we need to, folks, so we don't have a divided Jerusalem, ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. And remember this, when you get the book, Rise of ISIS, you get the song, Where I Stand With It. Back with more in a moment.
The nation of Israel is in the crosshairs once again, this time at the United Nations. Anti-Israel forces are pushing a resolution that would call on Israel to return to the Palestinians all territory seized since the 1967 Six-Day War, a move that would significantly reduce the size of Israel and leave our ally even more vulnerable to attacks from Hamas and other terrorist organizations. This dangerous resolution would also force Israel to give up key parts of Jerusalem, a resolution that's gaining traction at the UN. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice now and demand that the United States veto this anti-Israel measure. The Obama administration must defend Israel, our most important ally in the Middle East. The U.S. must reject this anti-Israel resolution at the UN. Add your name to our petition. Call 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
This is Jay Sekulow, Chief Counsel for the ACLJ. The battle to defend our religious freedom is being fought in courtrooms at the highest level. The need for exceptionally trained lawyers to protect our future is vital. Regent University School of Law is the nation's preeminent Christian law program for anyone considering a career in law today. ABA accredited Regent Law ranks top 10 in the nation in faculty, according to the Princeton Review. With over 66 awards, Regent also placed in the top two in the Oxford University Global Moot Court Championship, besting both Oxford and Cambridge. The ACLJ is located on Regent's campus in Virginia Beach, Virginia, offering students an unprecedented opportunity to work on landmark Supreme Court cases through our association. Real-world training by real-world lawyers for today's unprecedented challenges. Come and study law where the law began. For information, go to regent.edu/law. That's regent.edu/law. Broadcast, everyone. So you got ISIS now 8 miles from Baghdad. So much for the air campaign that's been going on. Let me give you, before we get into your calls and comments, 1-800-684-3110, let me give you an update on the UN situation with Israel. Than Bennett, our Director of Governmental Affairs, has been on top of this and working on this. Than, give us the latest here and what we are to expect.
Yeah, this is the draft resolution at the United Nations Security Council. Jay, remember, this is the resolution for all of our listeners that would put a deadline on Israel to actually retreat to the 1967 borders. We've talked at length on this broadcast that basically means
all-out war. Would move 500,000 Jews out of Jerusalem, if you can believe that. That's what would happen. Go ahead,
right,
Dan.
Well, I just think we need to remind folks that the United States really, this administration specifically, really created this situation. Remember, it was the president that first said that a resolution should be based on the 1967 borders. So it shouldn't be any surprise to us that Mahmoud Abbas put that in this resolution. Here's the bottom line, Jay. The United States could end this threat at the Security Council today. They could have done it last week by issuing this veto threat. They have yet to do so. We are continuing to demand that they stop it in its tracks. Got to issue that veto threat, and Jay, it's got to be public.
David, how many do we have that signed up on the petition on that? It was, I know we were over 50,000.
Oh, now we're well over 90,000. Okay, we're on our way to 100,000.
I was out of town one day, and there you go. Okay, so almost 100,000. I'd like to get it to 200,000 if we have to, and it looks like we may have to. 93,939 right now. Here's what I need everybody to, I want you to think about this. Could you forget just a divided Jerusalem. Could you imagine 500,000 Jews in Jerusalem having to leave? And Mahmoud Abbas says, you know, there's not going to be a single Israeli civilian in eastern Jerusalem. Folks, that's the Wailing Wall, the Western Wall. That's the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. That is Calvary. That's the spaces you're talking about. Those are the holy sites you're talking about. You want to put that in the control of Hamas and Fatah? I don't. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255 to sign on to that petition. That's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. All right, David, you're a major in the United States Army. Let's be clear here. This is important. The situation on the ground right now with ISIS, where they are, how dangerous. I mean, we're in it, you know, from someone that's not in the military, it looks very, very bad.
Well, think about how widespread ISIS is. On one side, they're 8 miles from Baghdad, hundreds of miles away. They're taking, in the process of taking a Kurdish town on the Turkish border with Syria, in the face of American airstrikes. That means we're dealing with the most capable terrorist army we have ever faced. And our airstrikes, we got to be clear, they're very small scale in comparison to our past activity.
Yeah, and by the way, at the same time, you got the president talking about using an executive order to close Gitmo. So where are we going to put these guys? And we may be capturing more of them. All right, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Let's take a phone call, Jordan.
Yeah, right to the phones we go. Let's go to Steve in Maryland on line one. Steve, welcome to JSecio Live.
Hey, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You're on the air.
Hello?
Steve, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Okay, well, great. I'll tell you, brother, I listen to you every day, and I...
appreciate it.
basically, all my news resource basically comes from Christian radio.
Good.
And I tell you, I'm just getting a little disgruntled by, us bashing these our leaders of this country.
Well, let's be specific. So give me the particular incident you're talking about and what has you concerned?
There's a position with our president that has a position.
Which position with our president that we're bashing do you think we should not be discussing? Steve, you sound like a nice guy. Tell me what it is exactly that you think that we bash the president inappropriately. And we don't use the word, that's your word, bash. We don't say bash. We disagree on policy issues. But what is inappropriate?
I'm just saying that it's a position of respect. It needs to be respected. And policy...
when you disagree with the president's position, what should we say? We respect him, but we respectfully disagree? We do say that often. We respect the office of the president, but when the president was promoting a policy that we disagree with, and Jordan will tell you this, we'll disagree with it. I mean, and Jordan's in Washington every day. I mean, Steve, you're listening to the radio. You're in Maryland. You're right there. You know what's going on. I mean, you can't just sit there and take this. You've got to respond. Okay, go ahead. Finish your sentence, and then let me have Jordan speak.
In this country, brother. I mean, I have fathers and forefathers all through history that have fought and died and spilled blood.
But, Steve, here's what I don't understand. You called our broadcast. You say you listen every day, and you said you're upset that we're bashing the president. And I'm asking you, what is it that we're saying that you fundamentally disagree with? And please tell me what that is so I can understand.
I didn't hear your question. What was that?
I don't think Steve can see more questions. He doesn't know what he's talking about. The truth is, the reason why if forefathers and people have fought and died is because we don't have a king and we can say what we want. I mean,
right.
The truth is, that's why Leon Panetta, people who work for the president, and certainly we don't, but people who were chosen by the president to be the Secretary of Defense, the head of the CIA, the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. So we have two Secretaries of Defense and one a Secretary of State, all who worked for President Obama,
right.
All who have had very strong words about his leadership, one who has now said he's given up on the country. In America, if we have people saying that about our president who were close to the president, we need to be able to voice that concern. That's part of our rights. I mean, that's what's great about America is we don't have a king.
Let me play Leon Panetta talking about someone. This isn't our words, folks. This is the former Secretary of Defense and the head of the CIA, number 7.
Frankly, it's not going to work just to do air attacks without having
not
people on the ground
right.
who know where the targets are and what's going on. And I think deep down, he knows what needs to be done. What he's got to do is develop the will to fight, to get into the ring.
He better get
in
on
order
it.
To make it happen.
He better get on it.
I agree with you.
He's a reluctant commander-in-chief, David. That is the problem.
Oh, absolutely. And the numbers bear it out. I mean, let's look. When we first launched our Afghan campaign in 2001 against a smaller force of al-Qaeda, we flew 6,500 strike missions, dropping 17,500 bombs. Now we've flown 360 strikes, dropping 950. That's a small-scale air campaign. So everything Secretary Panetta says is true, and it's even more true when you dive into the real numbers.
All right, let's go ahead and take another phone call here. Let's take Tim calling out of Tennessee, Jordan.
Yep, Tim, welcome to JSecio Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Tim.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Longtime member,
20-year
veteran.
Great, thank you for your service. Great.
Thank you. I'll try to be as brief as I can. I got two questions. One, why is the UN worried about Israel when they should be worried about ISIS?
That's a good. Let's start with that one. Okay, let's start right there. Than, you're the one that handles the UN matters for us. This is, I think, what's happened is that the UN is, and especially the Palestinian Authority, which is their partner Hamas, is using this situation with ISIS to make their move now because no one's paying attention to them. So that's why you make the move.
Yeah, you're right. And just to simply answer Tim's question, the United Nations is about the most anti-Semitic place you will find on the face of the planet. But you're right. I think Mahmoud Abbas has taken this opportunity yep. to exploit his agenda. But we've got to be very clear. He does this all the time, Jay. And the United States, the President of the United States and his allies there at the United Nations, shut it down by issuing a veto threat at the Security Council. The only difference between what Mahmoud Abbas always does and what he's doing now is that the United States is letting him do it.
You know, and Jordan, the reality is, being in the region as much as we have, you divide Jerusalem up, you go to the 67 borders, you're spelling the end of the Jewish state. I mean, that's what it would be. You would be, yes. it'd be the Prime Minister of Israel signing a death warrant on Israel.
Yeah, it would be absurd, and no leader would do that. I mean, points of Israel that would be 8 miles wide or less, so indefensible, no area to put no real defensible border, because you're right up against terrorists who are launching rockets, and you put those rockets 10 miles closer, you know. So this situation, again, the promotion of this policy, you know, as much as we talked about a president that's given up, it doesn't seem like when it comes to the Middle East, he's budged at all on this anti-Israel strategy. When it comes right down to it, they do the minimum to keep Israel, and they wait until the last minute, like things with the Iron Dome yep. and other situations, to help defend Israel and stand with Israel at the minimum. At the minimum, they do the least they can do as the United States of America.
You know, we've talked about the biblical sites, the historic sites of Jerusalem being put under Hamas control. But, David, from a military standpoint, you look at, and you've been there, you look at that region, you look at Israel, you're talking about street, you'd move a couple streets over and you'd be in a Hamas-controlled area. Not only would it affect the holy sites, it would really changed Israel's ability of self-defense.
I mean, there's a reason why there are multiple large-scale shooting wars between 1948 and 1967,
yep.
with long wars of attrition in between, because those borders were indefensible. Those borders invited attack on Israel. It created instability in the Middle East. And so do we want to go back to that? I don't think so.
All right, folks, you need to join with us and stand with us as we fight for Israel at the UN and their ability to keep their borders as they are, and not have Jews removed from Jerusalem. ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. That's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. We encourage you to make that call. Add your name in that petition. Again, ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. Our book, Rise of ISIS, a New York Times bestseller because of all of you that have bought it. It is now available in paperback. On Tuesday, you can pre-order it now on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, or go in and order multiple copies for your friends. Rise of ISIS, and you'll get the song Where I Stand with it. We'll be back with more in a moment.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, holding the Internal Revenue Service accountable for a targeting scheme aimed at conservative and Tea Party groups. The ACLJ represents 41 organizations in 22 states in the largest lawsuit against the IRS on behalf of targeted Americans. Now it is time for the story to be told. The ACLJ has put together a short movie telling the story and explaining the high stakes of our fight against IRS abuse. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sat down with Senators Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, Dr. Ben Carson, and many national leaders to tell this critical story. You can watch this movie free of charge. Go online to download this powerful new film, Tax Invasion, at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. The nation of Israel is in the crosshairs once again, this time at the United Nations. Anti-Israel forces are pushing a resolution that would call on Israel to return to the Palestinians all territory seized since the 1967 Six-Day War, a move that would significantly reduce the size of Israel and leave our ally even more vulnerable to attacks from Hamas and other terrorist organizations. This dangerous resolution would also force Israel to give up key parts of Jerusalem, a resolution that's gaining traction at the UN.
again. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice now and demand that the United States veto this anti-Israel measure. The Obama administration must defend Israel, our most important ally in the Middle East. The U.S. must reject this anti-Israel resolution at the U.N. Add your name to our petition. Call 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. Remember, Rise of ISIS, a threat we can't ignore, that you've put on the New York Times bestsellers list. It was number 3 the first week, number 12 the second week, number 8 in the books and print overall, and now it comes out in paperback on Tuesday, and we're asking you to pre-order those at Amazon and at Barnes & Noble today or wherever books are sold, and certainly go to visit the stores on Tuesday when it's out. Let's go ahead and take phone calls here, 1-800-684-3110. Let's go right back to the phones, Jordan. Let's take Tick's call.
Tick calling in from Oregon Online 2. Tick, welcome to JSecio Live.
Hi, Tick, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So I just wanted to say I don't understand how we have seen failed military strategy after failed military strategy from this guy, and we still can have a commander-in-chief who has no military experience and really isn't even listening to his advisors. And, I mean, I'm former United States Special Forces, so I understand
right. What's
going on with this stuff. What? And this guy, I mean, he doesn't have the knowledge. How can we let him make decisions like this?
Tick, you first of all, let me thank you for your service to the country. I'm going to go to David French on this, who's also a major in the United States Army. And I keep using the phrase, he's a reluctant commander-in-chief. You're right. He's got advisors. And these advisors are telling him, you know what? This pinprick airstrike obviously hasn't worked. They're 8 miles outside of Baghdad.
Well, right. I mean, you know, obviously, as a commander-in-chief, he is in command, and we have civilian control of the military, so he's unquestionably in command. We're questioning how he's used that command. And Politico wrote last year that he said of his attitude towards his generals is they are to be seen and not heard. He doesn't really want to hear from them. He has fired a number of generals, including some of our best warfighters. So the question that I have is not is he in command, but how is he executing that command? How is he doing? And I think the results speak for themselves. If he were a combatant commander, if there was a way to relieve him from command, the military would have done that a long time ago based on performance. But you know what? The buck stops with him. We've got him for the next almost 2 years.
Yep.
And so what we have to do as citizens is make our view heard in the hopes that he'll change course.
Is there, Jordan, Than, quickly, and we got a lot of calls to get to here. Is there a sense of frustration on Capitol Hill? I mean, I know they're out right now and campaigning, but the general sense with staff?
Well, I mean, listen, I think that there's an absolute frustration. You've had years now where the House has tried to move on pieces of legislation. Since the Affordable Care Act, no major legislation has moved through Congress. So everything gets stalled, and it's basically a president doing everything he can, as promised, through executive action. I think, Than, that's the role, is that Congress has had very little role because this president has basically said, if the Senate can't do it, and that he doesn't care, he's going to do what he can.
Yeah, and I just quickly say, I think it's actually gotten worse, Jay, because I think initially it was a concern that the strategy was one of containment rather than victory, and now I think the concern on the Hill, including those in his own administration, is we don't even have a strategy of containment. We don't have a strategy at all. We have a strategy of failure. So I really think the concern has gotten exacerbated, if anything.
All right, let's go to Tony, who's calling from Texas on line 6. Hi, Tony. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Hi, Jay. Just want to say thank you, and thank you for keeping us Americans informed. My question was, I had heard previous that there was the Kurds were being supplied, you know, with ammunition and all that. And haven't heard anything much about that. I know that Kobani's been pretty much taken over.
And they're on the outskirts of Baghdad. And the Kurds have been putting up a valiant effort. But, Tony, you asked a good question. David, what's the latest on that?
As far as I know, the Kurds in Syria are getting nothing. And the Kurds in Iraq are only getting light weapons like RPGs and machine guns when they're facing artillery and tanks.
Which means they're completely outmatched.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's not even a close situation. So, again, failure of leadership in an unbelievably dangerous situation. All right, Jordan, let's grab another call here.
Yeah, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Scott in Texas online for Scott. Welcome to JSecio Live.
Hi, Scott.
Good morning, sir. Just a real quick statement. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we hear you great.
I do not support Obama. He's a joke of a president. I support our military 1,000% and Israel as well.
Well, look, I mean, I'm not going to call the president a joke. Those are your words. I don't think it's a joke. I think he's a reluctant commander-in-chief. I think he's someone that, look, elections have consequences. This is the policies. And the reality is, and I think this is the truth, the policy's not working. And he's got a narrative in the Middle East, and he's sticking to it, whether it works or not, and it's not. But we've got an opposing view, which I want to take. Thanks for calling in, Scott. Let's take Jason out of Kansas on line one. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
We hear you great.
Okay, listen, I want to make a couple of statements, and I hope you don't cut me off because
well, then,
I waited a
go
long
ahead
time
and,
to
go,
talk
yeah,
to you.
Go ahead and make your – you're not the – believe me, you're not on the phone the longest, so but go ahead and make your comment.
Okay, first of all, it's a joke to really think that there's a difference between the Republicans and the Democrats.
Okay, what is that after we're done talking about that? So go to your next point.
Okay, well, if you're talking about Israel
– yep.
Why is it the United States' job to protect Israel?
What do you think? Well, let me ask you a question. What do you think the United States' position should on Israel should be?
Nothing. To stay out of it.
Stay out of it. So if Israel gets destroyed, that's okay.
Well, you know what?
Well, no, I just asked you a question. Jason, I just asked you a question. If the Jews in Israel get destroyed, you're okay with that?
Oh, I am going to answer that in a different way.
No, you're going to answer. No. See, I'm the host. You're coming on as a caller. I'm asking you a question. It's the only democracy in the Middle East, okay? It is a country that is made up of predominantly Jewish citizens, and if that country is attacked by massive armies, including ISIS and Hamas, and was in trouble, you think the United States and our main ally, you think the United States should do nothing?
Main ally for what?
Well, what do you think?
What do they contribute to the United States?
Oh, yeah, because those Jews, you know, they're controlling the world, right?
No. I didn't say that. Don't put.
Okay,
so main ally for what, sir?
Well, number one, do you like having your flow of oil? Because I know it's difficult. Do you understand? That's our ally to make sure the region's stable. If it's not stable, you know what happens there?
Anything.
Yeah.
I don't want to depend
on
those people.
You like the Suez Canal? That tends to be helpful.
I don't.
Go ahead, Jordan. And I'm going to let Jordan and David respond to this. Quickly, Jordan,
here. It's just an idiotic statement. I mean, you know, if you don't understand anything about international trade, how goods get to you and how you are delivered these things, then you make statements like you don't like the Suez Canal. You have to depend on other parts of the world. If we close off and say we're not going to help anyone else, guess what? You'll be in real trouble. You'll be paying about $15 a gallon for the gas, and that'll run out.
David.
Well, you know, I'll tell you one thing. When I was in Israel, I went by the place that helped invent and manufacture the kind of armor that helped save the lives of some of my friends in Iraq, and that came from Israel.
Yeah, so there you go. All right, we're taking more of your calls when we come back. Remember, we're here for another 30 minutes, so again, we'll be taking your calls. A lot more of the broadcast coming up. Folks, we have been number 3, number 8, number 12 on the New York Times bestsellers list. Those are in different lists, by the way, within the New York Times. We want to get on that New York Times bestsellers list for the paperback, and you've helped us do it on the ebook. We want your help now on the paperback. You go ahead and you can pre-order it today. It's going to be out on Tuesday, and it will be in bookstores everywhere. So let me encourage you to go ahead and pre-order it and get the book. Very important you do that. Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, and you will get our song, Where I Stand, that comes with it, both on the paperback version as well. You'll have a link to get the song. We have a petition up for Israel to support. On Monday, we're going to get into the whole situation with the U.S. security on the border and ISIS coming over. And what does that mean? We're going to get into that on Monday's broadcast. So it's ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255 to sign on to that petition for Israel. ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. Like us on Facebook. We're approaching 2 million too between ACLJ's and mine and Jordan's. Maybe over that now. We need you to keep doing that. Like us. Share the information out there. And remember, Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore. We want you to get that book. Get it on the bestsellers list for us, folks. It's helping change the debate. You notice everybody's using the phrase, Rise of ISIS? Not a coincidence. Back with your calls in just a moment.
This dangerous resolution would also force Israel to give up key parts of Jerusalem. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice now and demand that the United States veto this anti-Israel measure. The Obama administration must defend Israel, our most important ally in the Middle East. The U.S. must reject this anti-Israel resolution at the UN. Add your name to our petition. Call 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Broadcast, everyone, taking your calls at 800-684-3110. 8 miles out of Baghdad. What does that mean, David? I mean, I know it's a major city. It could be major implications. What does this mean?
It's an unfolding disaster. I mean, I think Baghdad can be held, but if they're 8 miles out, we're on the verge of house-to-house fighting in the streets of Baghdad, and it could be very, very ugly.
All right. So the situation, very, very serious. All right, we are taking your calls, Jordan. Let's take another call right now.
Yeah, right back to the phones. Let's go to Carmine in Colorado, line 2. Carmine, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Carmine.
Good morning. A couple of comments here.
Sure.
Number one, who has the right to tell Israel to go back to the borders of 1967?
We'll answer that one first. We'll take these in order. Number one, the UN will argue that under international law, those were armistice lines. They're going to argue that this is how you resolve it. It's going to be more of a political pressure point atmospherically than it will be a legal point, because the Israelis are not going to say, oh yeah, we'll agree to the 67 borders, but you're going to have this global outrage against Israel. And Than, that's part of what the Israelis are really having to deal with in the court of public opinion. That's why we want people to stand with Israel right now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And there's a domino effect here. It will also play in when Mahmoud Abbas goes to the International Criminal Court, tries to gain admission there. It will definitely play in, Jay, when he looks for statehood, because remember, the Security Council also approves statehood. So he's going to go to the Security Council. He's going to ask for the 67 lines, and he's going to cite the United States precedent standing down on this resolution. So it's a domino effect, and it really starts with this resolution.
Yeah, and I think the end result is that's why we've got to continue the fight at the level we are. By the way, that petition's at aclj.org or 1-877-989-2255, aclj.org or 877-989-2255. Let's take another call, Jordan.
Richard calling in from California on line 3. Richard, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Yeah, greetings and God bless.
Thanks.
I'm just wondering, is there any legal precedent whatsoever for circumventing the president on this sort of feckless approach here to ISIS?
Well, this is, you know, you bring up an important issue, but the way our constitutional republic is set up, the president's the commander-in-chief.
Yeah, he absolutely is the commander-in-chief.
So there's, elections have consequences here.
That's right. There's civilian control. But, you know, here's the thing. In our democracy, very soon we're going to be entering into, yes, another series of presidential debates. And this is where the American people are going to have a chance to reverse course. We'll see if they take it.
And I think that's going to be – and the reality is, Jordan, how do you think this is going to play politically in the midterms? That's an interesting question.
Well, I think that, you know, obviously you see what happened in Kentucky with the Democrat candidate who's trying to unseat Mitch McConnell, the GOP leader in the United States Senate. And she refused to answer. I mean, this is getting a lot of play. Whether she voted for President Obama, she's a Democrat Senate candidate, and she said, "Well, I was a Hillary Clinton delegate back in 2008." Well, Hillary Clinton didn't get the nomination. The question was not about that; it was about did you support President Obama or not. That's how much Senate Democrats are running away from people who would like to be in the United States, running away from President Obama right now on the campaign trail. They don't want to be seen with him, and there's been some articles, headlines in mainstream media that he's in hiding. You know, when it comes to the campaigns, he may be helping with some fundraising, private fundraising, but he's not on the trail.
But, Than, what's your sense on that from politically?
Yeah, you're seeing it in the midterms right now. I mean, the American people don't agree with the president. They want a strategy, a foreign policy of strength. So you see all of the candidates are running away from it. And, Jay, it's going to happen in the presidentials, too, probably on both sides of the ticket. You're going to see candidates try to separate themselves from this president's position.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for this segment of the broadcast. We got a lot more ahead. Don't forget, aclj.org or 1-877-989-2255 to sign on that petition for Israel. On Monday's broadcast, we're going to get into the borders of the United States, porous for ISIS. And what about these reports that up to 40 are already here under surveillance, 10 according to Duncan Hunter that have gotten in, others are saying that there's more than that. What does this all mean for the United States? We'll get into that on Monday's broadcast. So ACLJ.org, 877-989-2255 to sign that petition for Israel. And by the way, Rise of ISIS, a threat we cannot ignore. A New York Times bestseller because of you, from all of us. Thank you. You made that possible. Now we want to get it on the New York Times bestseller list for paperback. It's out Tuesday. Go ahead and pre-order it, multiple copies, or go into your bookstore and order it again. You can order it right there at your bookstores. It'll be everywhere on Tuesday. Rise of ISIS, a threat we can't ignore. Back with more in a moment.
The nation of Israel is in the crosshairs once again, this time at the United Nations. Anti-Israel forces are pushing a resolution that would call on Israel to return to the Palestinians all territory seized since the 1967 Six-Day War, a move that would significantly reduce the size of Israel and leave our ally even more vulnerable to attacks from Hamas and other terrorist organizations. This dangerous resolution would also force Israel to give up key parts of Jerusalem, a resolution that's gaining traction at the UN. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice now and demand that the United States veto this anti-Israel measure. The Obama administration must defend Israel, our most important ally in the Middle East. The U.S. must reject this anti-Israel resolution at the UN. Add your name to our petition. Call 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org. The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, holding the Internal Revenue Service accountable for a targeting scheme aimed at conservative and Tea Party groups. The ACLJ represents 41 organizations in 22 states in the largest lawsuit against the IRS on behalf of targeted Americans. Now it is time for the story to be told. The ACLJ has put together a short movie telling the story and explaining the high stakes of our fight against IRS abuse. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sat down with Senators Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, Dr. Ben Carson, and many national leaders to tell this critical story. You can watch this movie free of charge. Go online to download this powerful new film, Tax Invasion, at aclj.org. That's aclj.org.
Joining us on the phone right now is a good friend, Ed Gillespie, who's counselor to the president under President Bush, has been very involved in conservative politics and policy. Let me start, Ed, though, with a question that is on everybody's mind right now, and that is the president's handling of the situation with ISIS. You were in the White House when we were engaged in a full war on terror, where we had the kind of pressure facing our country and our commander-in-chief. Your assessment of what's been happening so far?
Well, obviously, Leon Panetta has made the point that the president, in terms of his approach to national security, not leaving enough troops in Iraq, not adhering to the red line in Syria, that resulted in doubts about America's credibility in the world. Jimmy Carter even said that the president's been slow to respond to the threat of ISIS. You know, I agree with that. That said, while slow, I support military strikes and the airstrikes in Iraq and Syria. I do believe that the president is required to get congressional authorization. I agree with the Democratic senator here in Virginia, Tim Kaine. And I would support such a resolution, but I think a clear debate on the floors of the House and the Senate would help, I think, for the commander-in-chief to explain his strategy, lay out the stakes here for our national security interest, tell us how, you know, we're going to accomplish our goals. And that would also get, I think, Jay, the American people, you know, more clearly understanding it and behind it. And that would send a stronger signal, because I believe it would pass. That would send a reassuring signal to our allies and potential allies, as well as our enemies, that we're committed.
As you view this threat right now, I mean, we have offices in the Middle East, so we've been on top of this. How serious of a threat is this?
Well, from what we have heard from the president's own national security team, his Secretary of Defense and Homeland Security and others, that it is a serious threat, and I can believe that. And you're right, I have served a commander-in-chief in a time of war. I've been in the Oval Office when casualty reports and death reports come in to the commander-in-chief, that this is not something that I would take lightly as a senator at all. In fact, it is the most serious vote a senator could be asked to cast to put the lives of their fellow Americans in harm's way. And from what I've seen, this is a national security matter for us, and that's one of the reasons I support this debate. And you're right. We in Virginia have, since our very founding, been on the front lines of the defense of liberty. And, you know, here we're seeing very serious impacts from the random, arbitrary, and deep cuts to our military that this administration and Senator Warner have imposed on our military and have weakened us and made us less able to deal with threats from ISIS. And I think that's a major concern here in the Commonwealth.
Jordan, I know you have a question for Ed as well.
Sure, Ed. I actually got to I worked next to your wife, Kathy, when I was served at the Bush-Cheney re-election campaign, so I know your family well. And I wanted to, and I know she's a great advocate for many conservative causes. She's actually been on this broadcast before for the efforts she's done. As you're, and you've done this in the past, you've traveled the entire country talking to people before, to representing whether it was the RNC or now in Virginia. The idea that that, you know, the president has given up. We have seen this actually come from, you know, we mentioned Leon Panetta. We've seen this from people who are, these were not Republicans. These are not conservative political strategists. These were people serving as a CIA director, serving as Secretary of Defense. Now, two Secretary of Defenses and a former Secretary of State have all criticized President Obama's leadership. And it seems like there's got to be some kind of change in Washington, not necessarily that we're waiting just for a change in the White House, but more checks on what the president is doing. Because right now we've got a situation where Congress is basically split up between the House and the Senate. And so the House may take action and the Senate doesn't.
Well, Jordan, I couldn't agree with you more. And that's one of the reasons that this election here in Virginia is so important this year, because it will have a national impact. Because when you look at the map, when we win here on election night, and I truly believe we're going to, we're closing in the polls and we've got a ton of momentum. But it will mean Republican control of the United States Senate for the last 2 years of the Obama presidency. And that is worth a lot, because Senator Warner, our current senator, votes with President Obama 97% of the time, despite promising us he'd be an independent voice. And I will not be a blank check for President Obama. I will be a check on him. And that's important. And, you know, not only would Mark Warner become the former senator from Virginia with the win here next month, but Harry Reid will become the former Senate Majority Leader. And that's worth a lot, too, in terms of getting good policy enacted, because the House sends out these bills, passes these bills that, for example, would restore the defense cuts that were random and arbitrary and deep through sequestration that Mark Warner voted for. The Senate can't pass it with a Democratic majority. You know, they pass bills that would create jobs and raise take-home pay and lift people out of poverty, and they die in the Senate. And so Republican control for the last 2 years of this presidency of the United States Senate would be worth a lot in terms of the future of our country.
Let me follow up that question, Ed, because I just became a grandfather not just a couple of years ago, and it gives you a whole new level of concern. Anyways, I will say, I was with some friends of mine yesterday in Maryland talking about this, and it does give you a whole new perspective of what we're leaving as a legacy to the next generation here. And it's a mess right now. I mean, you look at the national debt, you look at just the kind of the stagnation that exists right now. We also want to make sure that we're offering a message of hope here, that this is not the end of the American exceptionalism as we know it.
And it's not. And I always say the reason that I ran is because for the first time in our lifetimes, most Americans no longer believe we're a nation where the next generation can do better than the generation that came before us. That does not have to be our past. It must be our future. And it can be with the right policies. You know, this anemic economic growth that we have, the weakness at home and the weakness in the world, this is not somehow a matter of fate and destiny. It's the result of the wrong policies. It's the result of a federal government that is doing too many things better left to state and local governments or the private sector, and failing to do well the things it should be focused on: national security, border security, public health and safety. And when we get those priorities right, we will turn things around, and the next generation will do better than the generation that came before us. But we've got to turn things around, and it's not too late. It's getting later all the time, but that's why this is a high-stakes election in November.
You talk about the high stakes, Ed, and one of those is the nominations. The changes, some of the Senate rules, we may see some try to move through before the next election. But, you know, ultimately, it's likely that the president will have maybe another Supreme Court nominee. I mean, that he will be leaving even more of a lasting legacy. People may think that in some sense, legislatively, things have been stalled since really the Affordable Care Act. But at the same time, these nominations, I mean, these are lifetime appointments, and there's a number of those that could be made. The circuit courts alone have been changed really just overwhelmingly to the left, and the Supreme Court, you know, you never can predict exactly, but there could absolutely be a retirement, and President Obama, and without a check in the Senate, I mean, again, these nominees from the far left, they would sail through under the current rules.
Well, you're exactly right, and they have been, and they changed the rules so they could pack the circuit courts, and they're doing that. And that is one of them. By the way, Senator Warner, once again, voting with his party line, voted to change the rules of the Senate for the first time in over 200 years to allow for that. And that has raised the stakes as well. And you're right in terms of a potential Supreme Court nominee. And we were asked in a debate, Mark Warner and I, earlier in the week, you know, who do we see as good justices? I cited two that I helped get confirmed and worked through the confirmation process, Chief Justice Roberts and Associate Justice Alito. And Mark Warner said his model Supreme Court justice is Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That is very revealing, and that's a very sharp difference between us and how we view Supreme Court nominations.
Well, Ed, we appreciate you being on the broadcast and appreciate your service to the country, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on. Great to be with you both again. Take care.
All right, bye-bye. It's interesting to talk to Ed, Jordan, because he also was, when he was serving with President Bush, of course, a huge proponent and supporter of the State of Israel. That is not the case with the current administration right now, and that's one of the reasons why we've got movement at the UN by the Palestinian Authority, why all of this other that we've been talking about today, including ISIS on the outskirts of Baghdad. I mean, this is serious stuff. A friend of the Israel in the White House, it would be a nice thing. We don't have that right now.
No, I mean, you know, and Ed Gillespie, not only has his political pass as RNC chair, but you know, as counselor to the president inside the West Wing, right near the Oval Office. For the final about year and a half of the Bush presidency, these kind of issues to bring people on to talk about it, they've been at those halls of power in the kind of meetings we're talking about where President Obama and his team, they're either walking away saying he's not taking it seriously, not just that even they disagree with his policy, but that he's given up entirely. And so the idea here that on the one hand, we get told that he's given up. On the other hand, you could see this very kind of activist agenda. So there may be some broader concerns about President Obama and the way he's dealing with things like the Islamic State. But when it comes to Israel and the Palestinian issue, he seems to be very certain on his policy there. And that's actually, I think, an unfortunate thing is that on that issue, he's not giving up.
Yeah, I think that's right. And again, folks, that's why we want to stand with Israel. We've got this resolution or petition that's up that we're going to take to the UN. Sign on to it with us, ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. Also, remember this, next Tuesday, our book, Rise of ISIS, A Threat You Can't Ignore, available in bookstores from coast to coast. And we want to encourage you to go in and buy multiple copies, get it to your friends. If you got ISIS on the back outskirts of Baghdad, it's good to get educated. It's important to be informed on what happens here. And we want you to get the book, Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore. We'll be back with more in just a moment. This is Jay Sekulow, Chief Counsel for the ACLJ. The battle to defend our religious freedom is being fought in courtrooms at the highest level. The need for exceptionally trained lawyers to protect our future is vital. Regent University School of Law is the nation's preeminent Christian law program for anyone considering a career in law today. ABA-accredited Regent Law ranks top 10 in the nation in faculty, according to the Princeton Review. With over 66 awards, Regent also placed in the top 2 in the Oxford University Global Moot Court Championship, besting both Oxford and Cambridge. The ACLJ is located on Regent's campus in Virginia Beach, Virginia, offering students an unprecedented opportunity to work on landmark Supreme Court cases through our association. Real-world training by real-world lawyers for today's unprecedented challenges. Come and study law where the law began. For information, go to regent.edu/law. That's regent.edu/law.
The nation of Israel is in the crosshairs once again, this time at the United Nations. Anti-Israel forces are pushing a resolution that would call on Israel to return to the Palestinians all territory seized since the 1967 Six-Day War, a move that would significantly reduce the size of Israel and leave our ally even more vulnerable to attacks from Hamas and other terrorist organizations. This dangerous resolution would also force Israel to give up key parts of Jerusalem, a resolution that's gaining traction at the UN. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice now and demand that the United States veto this anti-Israel measure. The Obama administration must defend Israel, our most important ally in the Middle East. The U.S. must reject this anti-Israel resolution at the UN. Add your name to our petition. Call 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Listen, folks, in just a minute, I am going to switch gears for just a little bit. We're going to play for you an interview that Jordan did on One American News Network about the situation in Iraq, specifically regarding ISIS. But, folks, first of all, I just want to sort of reset the stage on this United Nations resolution that we're working on, that we're trying to encourage the United States, demand that the United States, quite frankly, promise to veto. And I want to set the stage by playing for you a little bit of sound from President Barack Obama. Folks, we've been telling you on this broadcast that the United States really created the environment, created the situation that would even allow a situation like this where the Palestinians could put forward a threatening resolution like this and get any traction, get any momentum, but they really are getting momentum with it, and it is really the fault of the United States, folks. First of all, for creating this situation, I want to play for you a piece of sound from President Obama. This is from 2011, talking about the borders that should exist in a new state, a new Palestinian state, a new Israel state. This is Byte 27. Let's go ahead and play it.
We believe the borders of Israel and Palestine should be based on the 1967 lines with mutually agreed swaps, so that secure and recognized borders are established for both states.
Folks, the 1967 lines, we have been telling you those are indefensible lines. Those are why those are not the lines that exist today. Those were lines that created an open line of fire into Israeli neighborhoods. Of course, but if the president comes out and says that we're going to negotiate a solution that is based on the 1967 lines, that is going to give it some traction. Guess what is in this resolution at the United Nations? The 1967 borders and a deadline for Israel to withdraw and acknowledge and recognize those 1967 borders. So the United States really did create this situation that we are in. They also created it by providing a weak response to other provocations from Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority. And I really do think we own a lot of responsibility for the situation that we are in. The good news is the United States can also provide a swift end to this challenge at the United Nations by simply publicly promising to veto this resolution at the Security Council. They have not yet done so. We are demanding that they do so swiftly. If you want to join that demand, call now 877-989-2255, or you can sign online at aclj.org. Okay, folks, quickly, as we head to the end of the broadcast today, I did want to play this interview with Jordan on One American News. I thought it was important for you to get this update on the ISIS situation. And again, if you have not yet ordered your copy of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Cannot Ignore, all of the information, including where to buy it, you can find online at riseofisis.com. Let's go ahead and roll this. This is Jordan on One American News.
Jordan Sekulow, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
Well, let's be optimist here. Let's say that we have a weakened ISIS 6 months down the road, a year, two down the road, whatever time frame that is. What does that mean? What next?
Yeah, well, it's assuming a lot, especially without any troops on the ground, either from our allies or special forces, not necessarily a ground invasion. But assuming that's true, do we get caught up in this situation again where we think, okay, a surge works or these airstrike campaigns have worked, and then we leave a vacuum in a place like Iraq or Syria, and the vacuum quickly fills, especially in the terms of military, quickly fills once again. And we've already been down this road with the Islamic State. They were al-Qaeda in Iraq. They ultimately broke off from main al-Qaeda because they were too brutal for al-Zahiri. So they were there. We did a surge in 2007 to fight this same group. Then we pulled out of Iraq, and guess what? They came back, and they came back with a vengeance. So it's got to be a long-term strategy, not just focused on the ground, but also looking at where financially they're getting support, the countries that are allowing this support, the UN, which has been somewhat unhelpful in this as well. And, of course, making sure that we're not afraid, ultimately, as you were talking about, to make this, it is a war about ideology. If we don't even understand the ideology behind it, how can we ever really beat it? And terrorism will always be a threat we have to deal with. But this is a specific kind of terrorism. It's jihadist, it's Islamic, and they're recruiting not just from the slums of the world, they're recruiting from the Western world and right here in our own backyard.
And before we go into our own backyard, let me ask you, how do we fight an ideological war like this without painting a broad brush against all, you know, people of all Muslim people
sure.
of all Muslim faith? How do you distinguish an enemy without a uniform? There's always going to be these splinter groups of Al-Qaeda. Sharia law sure. is the common thread which they have. I've been told this is probably a generational war, 25, 30 years. Do you agree with that? And how yeah. best do you attack that?
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever be done with the war against extremism when it comes to this Islamic extremism. Now, the difference between ISIS and the war that could continue, ISIS has kind of got, they've got ground forces, over 30,000. They've got a monetary system coming through about at least $1 million. That's a minimum a day coming in through oil, taxes that they run. I mean, they're running social services. Hmm. There will always be the groups who run to the hills. That's the kind of main Al-Qaeda, some of the ones that are hiding out in places like Northern Africa and throughout the world. And they'll come in, they hit, they carry out their attack, and they run back to their cave or their hole. They're not trying to establish the same way, at least, an Islamic State. They have a much longer-term plan for that. What we see here through Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, and now he calls himself Ibrahim, Caliph Ibrahim, is that we're going to start this Islamic State right here, right now. So long-term, how do we defeat this? We have to send a clear message of how we're going to respond when it happens. We know that that didn't happen in this case. This should not be a 30-year battle against the Islamic State. And certainly, we're going to have to wage wars against the threat to terrorism. We're the greatest country in the world. We're always going to face that kind of threat. But we've got to talk about it. You know, you talked about the idea of painting it with a broad brush. The truth is that for some reason, and I think we can all suspect why, that these groups are able to recruit out of mosques and madrasas in the Western world. It seems to me like there's problems in those mosques and madrasas. And instead of ignoring that or being so PC that we say, well, we're not going to look into that. I mean, how many times do we have to find out about a kid who gets radicalized here, someone who gets radicalized there? The UK has a huge problem with this right now. It's happening in what are so-called mainstream mosques. So what does it take? It takes either Muslims speaking out, getting rid of these people out of their mosque, turning them away, these imams that are preaching hate, and really instilling that into young Muslims at a very early age. And then second, if you're not going to speak out, well, then don't go cry every time people get concerned about what's happening within your faith. So we've got to hear more from louder voices, not just the dissidents within the Islamic world. There's plenty of them, and they've been brave. But if it's not the main religious leaders, people we may not agree with on all the political and geopolitical issues of the day, speaking out, though, the heads of these main mosques, then we're never going to stop that problem of recruitment. And it is ultimately a Islamic problem.
Again, folks, that was Jordan on One American News. If you do not yet have your copy of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, I strongly encourage you, go to riseofisis.com, order your copy today, either your e-copy or your paperback copy. Again, the website is riseofisis.com. But folks, as we close the broadcast today, we need your help standing with us at the United Nations. The United States, along with the United Kingdom, China, France, and Russia, are in a position to block this resolution. But I've got to tell you, none of the other four are going to do so. The traditional ally of Israel is the United States. The other four will defer to the United States on this matter. They need to publicly promise to veto this resolution. If you want to call on that, if you want to demand that, call now 877-989-2255 or sign up online at aclj.org. It's time for the United States to take the historical stand for Israel that they have always taken in the past. Call now, 877-989-2255, or sign online, aclj.org.
This dangerous resolution would also force Israel to give up key parts of Jerusalem. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice now and demand that the United States veto this anti-Israel measure. The Obama administration must defend Israel, our most important ally in the Middle East. The U.S. must reject this anti-Israel resolution at the U.N. Add your name to our petition. Call 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.